This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, folks. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. So, as the regular listeners know, the lounge has been a little dead the last couple weeks over the holidays. Not as many people coming into the lounge. A lot of just the cowboy in the lounge, or cowboy and cowboy senior in the lounge, or, you know, we are the celebrity count has been low. We'll just say that. But that's all changed here in 2015 in the lounge. So the music's blasting. We have our cigars lit. We're hanging out on the couch. So it's your host, the cowboy senior, who's a regular contributor, and of course my dad. How you doing, cowboy senior?
I'm doing great, cowboy. Freezing cold up here, but doing great.
Excellent. And we have a special guest for the lounge. We have a former NFL receiver and very, very active on Twitter and NFL, just football expert, sports expert, Rob Carpenter joining us. Pleasure to have you, Rob. Really, really appreciate you being here. How's it going?
Doing pretty good. Nice to be on the couch with the cowboy and cowboy senior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know if you smoke, Rob, but is your drink nice and full?
I'm good. I'm good to go.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, so very interesting stuff going on in the world of sports, and we're taping this on Wednesday night, and real interesting news, real big news today is that Jameis Winston, Florida State quarterback, Heisman Trophy winner, very, very unsurprisingly announced that he will declare for the NFL draft, and Rob's a big Jets supporter. Am I right about that, Rob?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
And Jameis Winston seems like the kind of guy that maybe a quarterback, I don't want to say quarterback starved, but quarterback needy team like the Jets may be interested in. They're sitting in the six hole. Rob, do you think with the off-the-field stuff, there's a chance he slips there, or do you think they're going to need to make a move up? And would you make a move up?
In my opinion, they would probably have to make a move up. Jameis is... by all accounts, probably the number one prospect in the draft, especially at quarterback. I've seen enough GMs and football people talk about the difference between him and Mariota and the reason why they would take Jameis. And I agree pretty much with everything that they say as far as him being pro-ready right now. He runs that type of offense that's already pro style offense, and you know, pretty much Florida State leaned on him to do everything as far as offensively. So, just you know, in my opinion, he is the number one prospect, but I don't think he'll be there at number six for the Jets. They would probably have to make a move to get him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think in a vacuum, right, without the off the field stuff, Winston is just far and away very clearly going to go number one, right? I mean, I think with Mariota seems like more of a guy that you're going to have to build an offense around, whereas Winston, I think, could pretty much step in and quarterback any offense in the NFL. He reminds me a lot of Ben Roethlisberger in that, you know, maybe with some of the off the field stuff too, unfortunately. But Ben, you know, he's big guy, big arm, makes all the throws, just mobile enough to elude the rush. And I mean, if you've watched Jameis at Florida State, I mean, is there another guy in the country that you want the ball in his hands with 2 minutes to go down six? Not me. What do you think, Rob?
I mean, as far as you've seen for, you know, being a quarterback at Florida State for 2 years, no matter what situation it was in a game, you know, he's pretty much encountered it. And up until, you know, just last week, he still hadn't lost a game. So... no, that's pretty much what I based a lot of my evaluation of him on. You know, this year in particular, The team wasn't as good as it was last year, and still, you know, encountering every situation that you could come across, whether starting slow in games, him having turnovers, and them getting down and being down, you know, in the second half. And it seems like, you know, a switch always turned on with them in the second half. And, you know, he got things corrected, and Florida State just went on their way, and they won games.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, on our last episode, Rob, both Senior and I picked Florida State to beat Oregon, I think just based solely on him. Because, if you look at the rosters top to bottom, if you look at the way the teams have played this season, that Oregon looked like a favorite. But, you know, Senior and I both thought that Jameis would be able to pull it out. And he had the one bad mistake, but it looked like he was turning it on in the second half. And then, you know, lots of fumbles. Just fumbles.
I didn't have Florida State winning the game. I wouldn't have been shocked if they did. I actually did think Oregon was a better team, but I didn't think Jameis would be totally outplayed by Mariota, and in my opinion, he wasn't. Jameis played a very good game. It's just like what you just said, though. The Florida State turnovers basically killed him. And when the turnovers happened, it wasn't like they were, except for his fumble, it wasn't like Florida State was not making plays. They basically happened on big plays. And, you know, Cook's two fumbles basically happened. He had first downs, and it seemed like Florida State was going in to score. So, but stopped by Florida State's defense, and basically they weren't.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Senior, between Winston and Mariota, where do you fall?
I still think, as an NFL quarterback, I've been saying it all along that I like Jameis better. You just watch him play, eye test. He looks like an NFL quarterback. He can play from the throw the ball from the pocket, which is what you have to do in the NFL. He's big, strong, stands tall in the pocket, mobile enough when he has to be. And for all we say that he's obviously made some bad decisions off the field, which to me a lot of it is kid stuff. Besides that rape thing, which was how bad that was or what really happened. But besides that, all the other little things were like kid stuff. But as much as you see those between the lines, every time I watch him, he makes pretty much nothing but good decisions. He's an intelligent quarterback. He definitely shows leadership skills, qualities. He is a leader out there. You can see it. His body language, the way he communicates with his teammates. So I really think he is the whole package. And I know every mock draft I see has Mariota going number one. I completely disagree. I think Winston should be the number one pick in the draft. That's my opinion.
Good stuff, Senior. So Rob, back to the Jets. So they're sitting at six, and I think we're all in agreement that, the NFL is such a, you know, the quarterback's such an important position in the NFL. And when you see a Cadillac or even someone who could be a Cadillac quarterback there, they're not falling to number six, most likely. If you're the Jets, are you willing to pay that king's ransom? I mean, if it's going to take something, it's probably going to take something similar to what the Redskins gave up to get RG3, you know, a couple of firsts, a second and a player, something like that. So, are you willing to do that if you're the Jets to move from 6 to 1 or 6 to 2? And the second part of that question, if you're not, do you think Geno could be a long-term answer for them? I have an opinion on this, but I'd like to hear yours.
Well, the state of the Jets right now, I don't think they can afford to give up a king's ransom, even though they probably should. Because in my opinion, he's just that type of player that you can give up and give up those picks for, and I believe that you're going to be all right in the long run. It's just that with the state of the Jets right now, man, it'll be kind of chaotic if they did that and it just happened not to work. but as far as Geno goes, I don't think Geno is a long-term quarterback for the Jets. he has shown improvement over, you know, his two seasons, even though this year didn't start well. And honestly, in my projection of the Jets, I didn't see the Jets winning more than six games for the season. And no matter what people will say about the schedule or anything, that schedule was brutal. And I just didn't think the Jets had the talent to get past that. even if they had a veteran quarterback, in my opinion, once the season started, I just don't think they were going to be win more than six or seven games. But, you know, all in all, in my opinion, should the Jets give up a King's ransom to get Jameis? Yes. But will they? I doubt it, because of the way the front office is looking right now, and the guys they have looking for a GM, Cassidy and Wolf, and the way the owner Woody Johnson has been, you know, kind of bashed over the last few years about the decisions he's made. I don't think those guys will allow a GM to actually or look for a GM that will actually try to give up basically the whole team, you know, in his start as a GM.
Yeah, I agree that it's probably a little bit too bold of a move, right? Considering what's happened, what's gone on with the franchise. But Geno is you know, he's baffling to me, Rob Senior, because I mean the guy can, I mean, he's not Ryan Lindley out there, right? I mean, he plays like him a few times a year. But then, I mean, he could also, I mean, big flashes of brilliance. Like, you know, and he's a young quarterback, and sometimes it takes these guys a little while to develop, right? I mean, if he could harness some of those big games he has and become a little more consistent, he has weapons with Decker and Percy Harvin and good running game with Ivory and Chris Johnson. That I think if the Jets, that where the Jets really need to invest is in their defensive backfield. Right, it's great run defense, great, very good front seven, and teams just throw on them. You know, you can't run on them, so they throw and throw and throw because they just don't have much out there. So if I'm running the Jets, I'm drafting, using free agency for the defensive backfield, trying to give Geno one more year to see if he can become a little bit more of a consistent presence back there. What do you think, Senior?
You know, I almost wholeheartedly agree with what you said, because he teases you sometimes. We were together in that last game of the season watching him against Miami, and he really played well in that game. And you see him sometimes where he really plays well, but he's so susceptible to just making the big mistake, you know, to going into these funks where he'll go a stretch of a game where he just makes a series of mistakes and turning the ball over, and that just kills you. That absolutely kills you. But he does tease you, because he's capable of playing well, and when he plays well, he looks like, hey, this could be the guy. He makes some really nice throws. He moves around. He does a lot of really good things. He's a great athlete. Yeah, is it going to click in someday? I mean, he's still young. Is it possible that maybe next year it all clicks in, maybe with the right coach, something out there? Could be a segue into where we're going. The right coach, the right guy handling them. Could he be the guy? I don't think it's impossible, but boy, oh boy, I still don't think he'll ever be. He doesn't have the ceiling that a Jameis Winston has. You know, I don't know. If I'm in their position and if there's a way you can get that guy, I think Jameis has that ceiling where he could be one of those real, real top level NFL quarterbacks where Geno could be a very serviceable, good quarterback. He doesn't have the potential to be great. But even to be that good, serviceable quarterback, he has to start to minimize those mistakes, start making those two or three bad decisions here and there, because that's really what kills him.
Yeah.
I think the problem with Geno is that all of his good games have come at the end of the season. So therefore, once the season is over, he doesn't have anything to go right back into the next week to improve upon. He has to wait until to the next season to get it going again. After his rookie year, he played well down the stretch, those last four or five games, and then it was over. Same thing this year. you know, he played basically terrible to start the season, had a quarterback change. He got to sit down and look at things and see the way it was going, see some of the adjustments he had to make. Comes back into at the helm, and he starts to play decent again, and then again, season is over. So he has to wait again. But, you know, senior, you're right. When it's, it just seems to me when Jameis Winston steps on the field, you know, he has it all in his head already that we're going to win this game. I don't have any worry about it. No matter what, he'll always have the team in a position to win a game.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, I mean, it's going to take a lot to get him. And I think you're right, Rob, that no matter who they bring in, it's going to be tough for them to make that move. Maybe if they would have gotten a guy like Harbaugh and just given him full control, he's got the, I guess, the cred to make that move. And if it whiffs, he survives it. But it's going to be tough for them, but it's definitely going to be interesting. So wanted to segue, Rob, who do you like in the college title game?
I actually think Oregon is going to pull it out. Once it was actually said, I basically said, I think Oregon is a team that's too fast and plays too fast for the other three teams that were in it. Even though I did have Alabama picked to beat Ohio State, I still thought even if Alabama was in it, Oregon would have beat Alabama. And I think Oregon's defense is not given enough credit for the way they play. And I think they actually kind of showed it a little bit in against Florida State, the way they held up in the red zone, especially in the first half, not giving up any touchdowns the three or four times they were Florida State was down in the red zone, holding the field goals. And then that fourth down that they kept Florida State out of the end zone. I just think Oregon is just a little too fast for the for Ohio State.
Senior, you agree with that, or you think the Buckeyes have a shot in this one?
Well, if you held a gun to my head after watching those games, it's and watching Oregon play all year, it really is hard not to pick them. The chances I give Ohio State would be based on, number one, I think Urban Meyer is an incredible coach. And you give a really good coach 10 days to prepare. He's a hard guy to beat. And I think the probably in the formula I think that could beat them is to really run the ball, which they certainly can do, Ohio State can do, and try and control clock. And you could possibly wear down the Oregon defense, kind of like how the Eagles defense gets worn down with that hurry up offense, because when Oregon's offense gets on the field, even when they're clicking, the defense doesn't have much time to rest because they score so quickly, because they don't take any time. They're running that hurry up all the time. So if you could run the ball control drives, keep their defense on the field, and then their defense has to come right back on the field, even when Oregon scores, you might be able to wear them down. I'm giving you that this as a potential formula to beat them. But honestly, gun to my head, I see it as a high-scoring game, and I agree to get that fast-paced Oregon offense. Nobody seems to be able to handle it, so I would have to pick Oregon in a high-scoring game.
All right, so I think we're going to sweep it. I also see Oregon taking this one. I'm not going to rehash the reasons. I think if you like Oregon, those are the reasons you like them. So, you know, I think what's on everybody's mind and what everybody's most focused on is the NFL playoffs. And Rob, I don't know if you can tell from the accents, but we're Boston we're Boston guys. We're from right outside of Boston. Big Patriots fans.
Oh, I can tell.
All right. And you know, just to give you a little background, seniors, one of the things he's been this year has been a very, very like. We did our pre-football preview show, and he picked the Steelers to go like 3-13 or something. And he's real, and he's been on that all year. Every game they win, they didn't play good. You know, kind of just trashing the Steelers. And I told him coming into this week, I said, "Dad, if you're a senior, if you're a Pats fan, you really want the Steelers to win this game right? Because the one team that if I was a Patriots fan that I don't want to see is the Ravens. And even though they're different, you know, it's different, different personnel. I mean, they really should be 3-0 in Foxborough in the playoffs in the last, what, 6 years or whatever it is. And Senior was steadfast, cheering loud and proud for the Ravens, and now he gets what he wishes. So what kind of chances do you give the Ravens in Foxborough? And do you kind of agree with that assessment that they were really the team the Pats didn't want to see?
I agree wholeheartedly with that. I actually have the Ravens winning this game. That was my pick. I said it when the playoffs started. The one team that the Patriots didn't want to see was the Ravens. For some reason, you know, it doesn't matter the amount of personnel that changes somewhat with certain teams. It's just that certain teams have a way of playing well against other teams. In a way, if going back to the Jets and the Patriots, you would think the Patriots would just mop the floor with the Jets regardless in any game. And for some reason, it just doesn't happen. Those games are always close. And yes, a lot of times divisional games are close because the teams know each other so well. But, you know, you've seen the Patriots just destroy the Dolphins or destroy the Bills. And it just doesn't happen with the Jets for whatever reason. And I think this is one of those things with the Ravens and the Patriots. The Ravens just have the Patriots number, no matter who's on the field. And I think I saw a quote from Tom Brady where he said, you know, the retired guys aren't coming back for the Ravens, but the guys who are still there have played well against, you know, played well against them. And with him making that quote, it just reiterated to me, I think it's a mental thing with the Patriots and the Ravens. The big fellas that the Ravens have up front on their D-line, and Suggs probably yapping all game at Brady, and I'm pretty sure he'll be going right back at Suggs. The Ravens can run the ball. That's one of the things you have to do against the Patriots to keep them off the field. And just Joe Flacco, man, if for whatever reason, you know, he doesn't get the hype that everybody, all the other quarterbacks get, but for whatever reason, at this time of the year, once these games start, and, you know, even in Foxborough, you know, Joe goes up to Foxborough, and it's like the guy's unflappable up there. And I agree, man. This is still the last team that the Patriots actually would want to see in Foxborough. They really would wanted to see the Steelers win that game, because I think if the Steelers had won, the Patriots probably would have won this game going away. I don't think it would be close.
Yeah, they'd be playing the Colts, the Patriots kill the Colts every time they play. I mean, I think the thing that scares me about the Ravens, and it's the same reason that the Patriots struggle with the Jets, is that they stop the run. The Ravens stop the run, and they put and they can get pressure with just their front four, just like the Jets. And that's the recipe for giving this Patriot team problems, because the Pats, when they're, you know, if you look at when the Pats are you know, like, for example, when they play the Colts, who are a very good team, but the Patriots just run the ball down their throats. I mean, it's not a lot of Brady. It's more, you know, Blount and, you know, Jonas or whoever just running the ball down their throats. Well, they can't do that against Baltimore. And, you know, kind of from the player's perspective, Rob, because we obviously don't have that. Is that something that's palpable, where it's kind of an opponent that you've had? You know, you're supposed to beat these guys. Every statistic you can look at says you should beat these guys, but they just, you know, for whatever reason, when these two teams play, it's a different game. So when you're on the field, is that something you feel?
Absolutely. And if a player tells you that he doesn't, the player's lying. I can tell you that right now. You know, as far as an individual goes, the guys who you can play well against and the guys who, for whatever reason, you don't play well against. Same as goes with teams. Teams know, as a collective whole, the teams that you have played well against, the teams you know you should beat and you probably will beat, and then there's other teams who you know it's going to be, you know, a 59-minute, 55-second battle. And for whatever reason, it just ends up that way. And you know those teams that are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think Senior is probably ready to provide a counterpoint here. So, Senior, how do you see this one going down?
Well, I'll be the homer, but yeah, I think the Patriots are going to win the game. For one thing, on the defensive side of the ball, I certainly don't see the Ravens hanging a 30 spot on the Patriots like they did to the Steelers. I know Flacco's playing real well, but I mean, you're facing a different secondary here in the Patriots secondary with Revis and Browner in the gang. And I think they'll do a good job. I think the Ravens may be able to run the ball some, but I don't see them running all over the Patriots. They'll move the ball. You know, once you get into the red zone on the Pats, it's real difficult, especially with this secondary. So I see them having to settle for field goals quite a bit. On the offensive end, obviously the big key is their defensive front's pass rush against the Pats offensive line. Hopefully, and this is what I'm thinking, that I don't know how effectively the Pats are going to run the ball, but I think their running game will be better than what the Steelers had without Le'Veon Bell. I think the Pats will definitely, with Blount and, mainly Blount and like a 200-yard rusher on them. My own guy. It's my age. His name's escaping me. I'm Notre Dame guy, Rod. Throw it at me, please.
Jonas Gray.
Jonas Gray. Thank you.
That's a senior moment right there, as they say.
Yeah,
Rob.
That was a moment. It happened to me in my younger days. Anyway, I certainly expect us to attempt to pound the ball, do it enough to keep them honest where they're going to have to respect the run. And eventually that pass rush will slow down. And when it does, I think Tom can really exploit the Ravens secondary and put some points up. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not a Yahoo that's saying the Pats are going to blow this team out, because I know the Ravens have a lot of character and they match up well with the Pats. But I still see the Pats winning the game. The key difference may be, to me, red zone. I think when we get in the red zone, we're going to score some. We Patriots get in the red zone, they'll score some touchdowns. And I think the Pats red zone defense is really good and will hold them to some field goals. And you know, you might see like a 24-16 Patriot win, if I had to name a score. You know, they get three field goals and a touchdown. And that's, I mean, I know I'm supposed to say I fear the Ravens, and that's the one team the Pats don't want to play. And I didn't say that because, you know, I feel like the Patriots are a team with Super Bowl aspirations. We're not just a team that made the playoffs. The Patriots are a team that are in it to win it, that really – when you look at it, it's a team that can legitimately go all the way. They have the horses. That's the goal. Anything less will be a disappointment. So certainly if you really feel that way about the team, then you can't feel that we can't beat the Baltimore Ravens. The Pats can beat the Ravens, and I think they're gone up.
I think, in most aspects, you're actually correct. But I think the one thing that is underrated with the Ravens and is probably overlooked is the fact that Flacco can move. And his scrambling ability is going to, it might have an effect on this game. The way, if he can avoid some of the Patriots' pass rush, you got to look out for those big plays down the field, because they look for him. And even though Steve Smith Sr. is a little older, he still is making a lot of big plays this year, as well as the speed of Torrey Smith could affect the Patriots' defensive backfield.
Yeah, and you get, I don't know who to pick in this game, but one thing, I mean, the Ravens are a scary team. It's a bad matchup for the Patriots, and I think another underrated thing from the game is the Ravens' offense, and Flacco in particular, they really like to throw it deep. He just likes to throw it up, right? And
right.
Who's going to be matched up on Torrey Smith? Is Browner, right?
Right, exactly.
And who's drawn the most pass interference penalties in the NFL this year?
It's
Torrey. It's Torrey Smith.
Torrey Smith,
and it's not even close. It's not even close. And Browner is a penalty waiting to happen. I could see like multiple 30, 40-yard pass interference penalties on Browner. And, man, I think it comes down to, for the Patriots to win the game, The Ravens' weakest area is their secondary, right? I mean, it has been all season. That's their weakest area, and the Patriots have to be able to throw the ball, have to be able to attack the secondary. And having Gronkowski there and healthy is it makes a huge, huge difference.
That's huge. That is huge.
I think it comes down to, I mean, I don't see a blowout. I certainly don't see a blowout. And I mean, just it's just one of those things when these two teams play, it tends, I worry that things are going to snowball in the wrong direction for the Patriots. But so we have a point, counterpoint, and senior. Can we get you on record saying that it was a bad move to root for the Steelers to win that game? I'm sorry to lose that game.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I loved every minute of watching them lose. I loved the Pats win this week. And you know what? If you lose this game, then you know, where are you going to win the Super Bowl? You know, you gotta be able to beat the Ravens. Come on. So, no, I would have to put a bad move. I couldn't root for the Steelers on a bet. You know that.
It's a game of... Football's a game of matchups, right? And I think the Colts or the Bengals coming into Foxborough would... I don't want to say no chance, Rob, because, you know, there's always a chance, but very, very slim chances of even keeping the game within double digits. Denver coming into Foxborough, the way Manning's playing, I don't give them much of a chance either. The Ravens, though, I give them a bit of a chance, so we'll see.
The Ravens are the only team I gave a chance to go into Foxborough and win. That's it. I didn't give any other team a chance to go up there and win. and even before the season even started, I had the Patriots and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. But this one particular scenario, the way it played out, just that gives me pause because I just think the Ravens match up well. And for whatever reason, they have the Patriots number.
All right, so let's segue to the NFC. I'd like to get your thoughts on another game. So I'll tell you about a couple of weeks ago. I made the bold prediction, said the Road Warrior Cowboys they're gonna beat Detroit, then they're gonna go into Green Bay and win. They're gonna go into Seattle and win, and they're gonna go and they're gonna make the Super Bowl. And the whole script is gonna be flipped, and Romo's going from the GOAT to you know, all that bad luck's turning around for him, because I think he's a very, you know, he's a good player, takes a lot of unnecessary heat. And the way that they came out in that Lions game made me feel like maybe I should not host a sports podcast anymore, because I just have no idea what I'm talking about. But they got it together, and the call is the call. And I think I'm, you know, as a former receiver, Rob, I'm sure that call call bothered you a little bit. And,
it did. I could never see refs actually picking up a flag after making that call with the way calls are made, you know, nowadays in the NFL. There's just no way that I could see one ref make another ref overturn his call. I just couldn't see it. But to go back to your point, I agree with you. I had, if you go back to my Twitter page and you look what I actually, the statement I made right after the games were over, I actually picked two upsets. The Ravens going to beat the Patriots and the Cowboys beating the Packers this week. I kind of agree with you on that. And Aaron Rodgers' injury is kind of making it look like that could actually happen.
Absolutely. And I think... The Cowboys, it is as weird as it to say, I think they're really built for the playoffs with that running game. I mean, how do you beat Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay with that offense? Right? Keep him off the field. And I mean, the Packers aren't going to be able to stop Murray, I don't think. And you know, you make one or two plays on defense, Rodgers is a little gimpy. And you know, the fact that the Cowboys already proved they went into Seattle and won, that's the toughest assignment in football, right? And they did it. They did it this year. And I mean, I give them. I think they're going to win this game. I really do. No, but back to the flag. That play was, almost a carbon copy of, if you remember last year, guys, the Patriots Carolina game,
yep,
where the ball's in the air. Keekly just basically never turns around and just has his hands all over Gronkowski, and it was clearly pass interference, and it was a huge deal, but it wasn't a playoff game, and you know, Twitter exploded. But can you imagine if they would have thrown the flag and picked it up like they did in this case? I am not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. I think the refs just blew it. But what a, you know, What an awful call to make in that situation. And would the Lions have won the game? Who knows? Who knows? It would have certainly made things tougher for the Cowboys, but I don't know how they pick it up. What was your take on that, Senior?
Well, the other thing that was really weird about it, I mean, it's not that unusual to see a flag picked up. You know, you see it periodically through the season, but I don't know if I've ever seen a flag picked up after the referee announces the penalty. He actually, you know, the ref's mic'd up and he gives you the announcement. The referee announced the penalty, and then they talked and picked it up. And I think some of that speaks to a problem that everybody's talking about that should be addressed, and I think we may see addressed in the off season for next year, is to have crews that have worked together all season stay together for the playoffs and not have a group of guys who have never worked a game together suddenly get thrown together, because there certainly is some teamwork and cohesiveness into officiating a football game, and the way they did that showed that that really pointed out that these guys weren't on the same page together, that communication didn't get to the referee before he made the announcement. I mean, that made it look a lot worse. And I think that is an issue. And I think the game, that whole game wasn't that well officiated. There were a lot of calls that were shaky both ways. And I really think they got to go to crews that are used to working together. I think it makes a whole lot more sense. I mean, you've got to feel more comfortable. You're on the field. It's kind of like being an athlete. You're on the field with those same guys all year long. You kind of get a feel for them. You kind of look up. You know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to communicate with you. You know how they call the game. And it just makes so much more sense to keep them together, and hopefully they will. But some of the other calls, one of the calls that bothered me the other way that went against the Cowboys earlier in the game, there was an offensive pass interference called on Terrence Williams on a play that he reached a big gain. And if you saw the play, he made contact with the defensive back, but he got chucked into him by another defensive player. It was really a horrible call. There were bad calls both ways, but that one that's the one that's going to stand out, because not only was the flag picked up, but the penalty was announced. It just really looked horrible. So hopefully the NFL will address that, and I think they will, because there's been a lot of noise made about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they also came out and said on the 4th and 6th play where Witten caught the 16-yard pass that they missed holding on Sue. Not Sue. Sue was being held. So another call blown against the poor Lions. So who where are you going with that one, Senior? You like the Cowboys in Green Bay, or are you going to go with the Packers?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to have all three of us pick an upset, but yeah, I do like the Cowboys. The fact that Rodgers is dinged up, the fact that the interesting thing about this matchup too is it's the first time in history that an 8-0 home team plays against the team that went 8-0 on the road. Obviously, the 8-0 on the road is the real unusual one. It's probably why that's never happened. But yeah, the Cowboys really are really good on the road. Here's the one thing, you know, the only thing that makes me wonder about the Cowboys, and I know they were home this week and haven't played that way as well at home all year. They were a .500 team at home. But beyond that, some teams, I don't know, and Rob, you can probably speak to this because you played, and you actually played in a couple of playoff games in your last year, and I know you had the thrill of catching a 43-yard touchdown pass from Rodney Pete in a playoff game, which had been great. But in the playoffs, is there something really different about the feel of the game when you go on the field? Because you look at the Ravens and the Steelers just totally annihilated them twice in the regular season. And then you get a playoff game, and these Ravens guys, for some reason, we say the matchup with the Patriots, but beyond that, what they did a couple of years ago and some of the same guys where they were playing awful. They had lost 4 out of their last 5 games, and then they went on a roll and won the Super Bowl. They're the kind of team that can play in the playoffs, and I'm wondering if maybe this could be an Achilles with the Cowboys, that they're just not that type of team. But can you speak to the difference, Rob, in going on the field in a playoff game, how it felt as opposed to a regular season game, what the difference was?
Well, the mentality of the game itself, you already know that if you lose, you're done. There is no more we can go in and correct anything the next week. That's the first thing. The intensity intensity of the game is probably 50% more intense than a regular season game. And you feel it right from the very kickoff of the game. You can see right from the kickoff which teams are actually playoff ready as far as how they're settled down. And you can tell, since we're on the Detroit Cowboys game, from the very beginning of that game, you can see, for whatever reason, the Lions had never played in a playoff game, basically. But you can see they were settled down, and I think that might have to do with Caldwell being the coach and the way he had them prepared, because those guys looked like they were ready to play, and the way the game was progressing, you know, just it looked like a regular season game to them. Whereas the Cowboys, especially Romo, and I was pointing out during the game, Romo didn't look settled at all. He looked like he was very cautious the way he started the game. Like he didn't want to make a mistake because at that point, you know that there is no tomorrow. You make a mistake and something happens, you know, cause you to lose a game. You know, you can't go back in and say, okay, we got this next week. The veteran teams, and that actually struck me a little curious, the way the Cowboys actually started the game. They corrected it and got things going in the second half. But we're actually talking about how they played on the road. Those good playoff teams can go on the road, and they have that mentality. You see those best playoff teams go on the road, and it seems like things just don't faze them. The crowd doesn't faze them. A mistake in the game doesn't faze them. You know, the Cowboys have it all set for a team that can make a deep run in the playoffs. That's just basically the mentality right there. You know, you can settle yourself down. You know there's no tomorrow, but you want to play the game, not thinking about the mistakes that can be made, because you know there's going to be some made in the game. Things are not going to – the game is not going to be perfect. You just can't let it get to you or follow you the next play when something happens against you. And those teams that can actually do that, and you have the mentality to do that from play to play, those are the best teams going throughout the playoffs. And that's another reason why, going back to the AFC real quick, I think the Ravens actually have that and have had that. Ray Lewis was one of those guys that could have that, had that team ready to play in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. Battle tested. So Rob, your old position, receiver, before we sign off, one of the reasons I picked the Cowboys, as I think for myself personally, if I could have any receiver in the NFL playing on my team, it would be Dez. He's just, you know, fast, big, makes all the plays, and he's just crazy enough that, you know, he borders from real fiery to maybe a little irresponsible, like running on the field with his helmet off. But I think he's the kind of guy that they need as a team that hasn't won in the playoffs. I mean, where his will is a big part of who they are. But who do you think the best receiver in the NFL is?
Honestly, man, for me, looking at it that way, I can't make a distinction of who's actually the best. Because as you just said, when I look at the game as far as a receiver goes, I'm looking at a few things. And Dez, for me, just like you, he is one of the best. I would have Dez in any conversation with anybody about top receivers in the game. Dez, Megatron, Antonio Brown. Now,
love Antonio Brown.
You know, those guys, no matter what, no matter how the defense is playing them, no matter how defensive coordinators construct defenses to defend these guys, they still can make plays. And in a one-on-one situation, 80% of the time, those guys are coming out on top. They're winning the battle in the one-on-ones. And, you know, Dez has his strong points. So you said Dez is a big, strong guy. For me, the way I played the game and the way I look at receivers now, I love the guys who can make plays after they have the ball in their hands. And Dez is one of those guys that, you know, he can catch a 5-yard hitch and he can make 4 guys miss and he can go the distance. So I love guys that actually play like that and have the ability to do that. And he's one. Antonio Brown is another. You know, Antonio has been coming along for the last few years, and I've liked him ever since, you know, was a young player with the Steelers. I saw that right from the very beginning. And especially with him as a punt returner, same way. So, you know, he's one of those guys, he just likes to have the ball in his hands and he can make those plays. So for me, judging, you know, receivers like that, it's really hard for me to say who's actually the best, because each guy will have a little something that he can do better than another. But, you know, a conversation like that, I'll probably put four or five guys as saying that these are the guys that I would look at as the top tier, even though top tier receivers in the league right now, there's probably like 10 guys in the league that you can put in a top tier.
Yeah, I mean, the talent's just – and I agree. The talent is just incredible at that position. Antonio Brown reminds me so much of Marvin Harrison, you know, kind of same type of build, right? And every time you look up, he's you know, you know the defense is concentrating on him, but he's still no one within 5 yards of him. I mean, just like the way he runs his routes. So one more guy I'd like you to talk about, and then we'll wrap things up, Rob, is Odell Beckham. So we haven't really seen a guy too much like this. You know, I'm sure you've watched a lot of him. What are your thoughts on Beckham?
Incredible talent. I saw it when he was at LSU. Even though Landry, for the most part, at LSU got most of the publicity, Odell Beckham was a guy who, again, because you know, I did it myself. I was a punt returner. So I look at guys who, you know, just like to have the ball in their hand and can make plays along with playing the receiver position, can do everything well at playing receiver, can run every route in a route tree very crisp, and, you know, can adjust on the fly to the way defenses are being played against him. And Odell Beckham, man, this guy, if he can stay healthy for his career, holy cow, this dude could probably be, you know, we'll be talking about him as probably being one of the best receivers ever played a game.
Yeah, because he's got that, you know, he's got that same kind of quick speed like Antonio Brown does, right? But so those hands and that jumping ability, he goes up and makes catches like he's Randy Moss, you know, in the draft.
Exactly.
It's an incredible combination. But to your point, I think his one, I don't want to say weakness, but one, you know, one area where he could have issues, you know, he's probably not a guy you want to just send over the middle into a bunch of hits all the time, right, given his makeup.
No, he's not a very big guy, but at the same time, you know, the game has changed. So, you know, I don't think he'll take, even if he plays, you know, the slot position here and there and has to catch balls in the middle of the field, he's not going to get, you know, banged up per se. Like, for example, when I was playing, you just got hit just to get hit when you went into the middle of the field. You know, that doesn't happen nowadays. So, you know, those guys have a little leeway. You can see it, like, again, as I just said, Antonio Brown is one of those guys. He catches a lot of passes in the middle of the field. And he's shifty enough right along with Odell Beckham to where those guys can catch the ball and they can avoid a lot of big hits. Those guys are quick enough that when they're in the middle of the field, they're too quick for the defensive backs to react as long as the ball is put there on time. You know, if a quarterback is laying them out over the middle of the field, leading them right into a defender, they're going to get cracked. But, you know, those guys can make the plays once they catch the ball, look out.
You can ask AJ Green about that, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that was unfortunate with AJ. He caught the ball late when he actually got knocked out in the last game, but the game previous to that when Dalton actually got him hit.
Let him, it was awful.
Right.
I mean, just high and outside, and because he's another guy that you can put right in that conversation. You know, I mean, he hasn't had the quarterback play that some of the other guys have had, but you know, as far as physical ability, and I mean, he's a great, great receiver. And I don't know what they're going to do, Rob. I don't know if they're like between a rock and a hard place. They're just good enough to lose in the first round, and there's really no quarterbacks available. And I don't know. Do you think? You got to think Dalton and Lewis are gone eventually, right? If they keep just getting bounced in the first round of the playoffs.
If I know Cincinnati, it'll probably be 3 or 4 years before those guys actually add it. If the trend continues, Cincinnati's just good enough to where they'll win a division, like you said, and get bounced in the first round of the playoffs. And but Cincinnati's that type team where, you know, the ownership, they like stability like that. They don't like to just change just because it's the trend to change. So I can see Marvin Lewis actually being there for quite a few more years.
Yeah, and you know, it's a shame, really, because, I mean, they really have pieces around Dalton. I mean, that running game might be the best. They might have the best two-headed monster at running back in the NFL. Great receivers, good defense, and, you know, you'd think if they just got to put someone serviceable back there that they could really make some noise. I mean, in your career, have you had – is that you know, like watching – how do I say this? So, like, watching the Arizona Cardinals game – and watching poor Larry Fitzgerald's face when he's standing alone and he runs the perfect route. He's standing alone in the end zone and the guy throws it 10 feet over his head. How do you dust yourself off and just keep going without getting frustrated? And is that something that, you know, as a receiver that you have to, are you feeling angry at the quarterback at that point?
Well, at times you will, but then also Larry's at this stage in his career where he just understands. He gets it. He's like, all right, you know, there's nothing he can do. You know, it's not, you know, the way the season started and Carson Palmer was playing early in the season, I actually basically said that Arizona was the most underrated, you know, 10-win team in the league, you know, when Carson goes down, you as a receiver, you'll understand that, you know, it's just not going to be the same. It won't be the same. So, you know, I feel bad for the way things progressed with, especially him, you know, because he's one of the good guys in football. And, you know, you look at Larry Fitzgerald and you're like, man, this guy doesn't deserve this. He's one of the better players in this league. And you just wish that he would have had the opportunity to play, you know, a long career with a great quarterback and see what would happen. But, you know, as a receiver, you just say, man, you just chalk it up to, you know, what can you do? There's really nothing you can do. You get frustrated, of course, because, you know, you're working hard to do what you're supposed to do. And, you know, when things just don't progress the way they're supposed to, you know, balls hitting the turf or flying over your head or, you know, just off just that much to make it a play where it should have been, you know, an easy catch. You have to make a tough catch. It's just like, wow, man. You know, what can you do?
Yeah, and I mean, I lived in Arizona for about 8 years, and he really is. I mean, he's out in the community. He is, like, genuinely, you know, I don't know him personally, but I mean, seems like just genuinely like a really, really, like, a good guy and such a good receiver. And it's such a shame after Warner left. I mean, his prime, I don't want to say it got wasted, but the guy was probably a top three receiver in football, and he, you know, he's getting 800 yards receiving because they just don't have anybody who can even kind of get him the ball. You know, I mean, Andy Dalton would have been like Joe Namath or something to the Cardinals. But
basically,
yeah. All right. So we want to get you on record, Rob, for the other two games while we have you here. Give us your picks for Denver, Indy, and Carolina, Seattle. I don't think you're going to shock us with either of these, but maybe I'm wrong.
Nah, Seattle should win. They'll probably win that game fairly easy. And I'll pick Denver to beat the Colts. So I have it Denver versus Ravens and the AFC division championship game and the and Seattle versus the Cowboys in the NFC championship game.
All right, so I'm going to pick the Colts. I think something's wrong with Peyton. I mean, unless they were kind of sandbagging, I don't know why they would go and, you know, run the ball 40 something times a game for a few weeks. And then when he does throw, it's against the Bengals and he throws four picks and he's getting out pat, you know, 8 yard out patterns are getting cut off by Drake Kirkpatrick, you know? So I don't think the Colts are a very complete team. But I do think Andrew Luck is that good, and I think eventually the torch is going to be passed. And I'm calling my shot. I'm saying it's going to happen on Sunday in a shootout, in an absolute, because the Colts are not going to be able to stop C.J. Anderson, not Manning. The Colts won't be able to stop C.J. Anderson. So like 35-31 Colts with Luck driving them down the field at the end. And I'm with you, Seattle. Carolina's not in that game after halftime, I think. It's a tough situation for them. Real quick, Senior, who you got?
obviously Seattle. That one's a no-brainer, and I'm going to go with the favorite, Denver, because how they sit on, they just have a better defense. I think that Denver has a solid defense, and I don't think the Colts defense will be able to stop CJ. So Denver and Seattle, and Rob, I really hope, I'm really behind you. I hope you go 3-for-4. You know, you're wrong.
All right,
man, 3-for-4 is good. You know, it's really good.
Good thing is we got Saturday and Sunday to watch.
Absolutely.
There you go. Looking forward to it.
Can't wait. So really appreciate everyone tuning in for the lounge. We're going to keep it a little shorter than usual tonight because we had a very special guest, Rob. It's been awesome. We hope, we would love to have you back. It's been great just sitting here talking football with you.
Appreciate it, guys. Come back on anytime you like.
Awesome. So we're going to go refresh our drinks. You know, kind of enjoy the scenery here in the lounge. Tough to see through the cigar smoke, but we have to show Rob a good time while he's here. And so, for Rob Carpenter, for Cowboy Senior, I'm the Cowboy. I'm out. Say the nigga that she with ain't shit. Shout to say the nigga that she with ain't this. Shout to say the nigga that she with can't hit. But shout it, I'ma hit it like I can't miss. And you can't do this, and don't do that. Shout it, need a refund, need to bring that nigga back. Just like a beef fun, I make her bring that air back. And she bring that air back. Because I like that. Shawty say I'm look like a lollipop. She say I'm look like a lollipop. She say I'm look like a rapper. Like a lollipop. Shawty wanna do. Bottles in the club. Bottles in the club. Shawty wanna sound like dumb. Never lay down. Call me so I can make it juicy for y'all. Call me so I can get it juicy for y'all. So I can make it juicy for ya. Call me. So I can get it juicy for ya. Call me. So I can make it juicy for ya. Call me. So I can make it juicy for ya. Call me. So I can make it juicy for ya. Call me. So I can make it juicy for ya. Shout it on the bottles in the club. Call me so I can get it juicy for you. Shout it on that, look me like.